The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Greetings, citizens of Earth and all beings, both extraterrestrial and interdimensional. My name is Danny Roth, and this is Who Won the Week, Sci-Fi Wire's podcast dedicated to the top stories from the week in geek. I am joined this week by Sci-Fi Wire's editor-in-chief, Adam Swiderski, and Karima is away this week, and in her place, we have the news editor, Alexis Loynaz.
Good morning, everyone. Good afternoon. Good evening.
Wow.
All and good night.
And good night.
And good night.
And that's our show.
Bye. It's been a while.
It has, but it's great to be here.
Yeah. How's everybody's week been?
It's been a good busy week.
I feel like it's been on the back end. Like every huge thing happened for the most part, like in the last 2 days. Like I had written up like a whole like roundup for the week. I was like, I'm done. I did it on Wednesday. I was like, I'm good to go. And then all of a sudden, like 20 different things happened that I had to consider, and it was very irritating. Come on, man.
Way to go, things.
Yeah. Come on.
Happening.
Just be done by Wednesday.
Yeah.
I got other stuff to do. We do this thing at the top of the show.
We're going to talk about what we're going to talk about.
Oh,
we usually do that too.
Oh, okay. I'm tired, man.
Come on.
Here's what happened. I've been up all night working. So sometimes I forget things. So there's a lot to talk about. There's Captain Marvel. There's some Disney Marvel stuff going on. There's some new gaming streaming stuff coming out. There's another classic system because everybody got to get that classic on. And like a lot of stuff that we'll talk about in due course. Maybe we'll talk about something involving Batman. I haven't decided yet. but first... we do this thing at the top of every program where we talk about what we're personally geeking out about, but I'm not sure if we should keep going. Adam, should we?
We.
Like the Nintendo Wii?
No, like the French Wii.
Like the French Wii.
Oh, okay.
I'm going to see, since we do this bit every week, I have to start spicing it up with some foreign language.
Nothing says spicy like France.
That's right.
all right, well then... I was going to do like a weird French accent, but that sounds racist. So, hey, Adam.
Yo.
What are you geeking out about?
Well, I haven't had a lot of personal geeking out time, unfortunately, in the past week. As you said, it's been pretty busy, but mostly about Sci-Fi Wire's plans for New York Comic Con, which I've been in.
Wow, what? Please tell me what's going on.
No, I've been in the process of gearing up. We are in the process of gearing up for that, and I've been in the process of coordinating things and trying to get all the ducks in a row, etc., because it's going to be a big con for us. If you saw us at all at C2E2 or Emerald City Comic Con in Seattle, we are once again going to be doing a live stage show as we did those two cons, but it's going to be bigger and better than ever. Oh my God. Because the lineup, I'm not at liberty yet to say who's on stage, but the lineup of guests that we have is really, really great. And, definitely of those three cons that we've done this stage show at, the most robust, the biggest names. It's going to be a big deal.
Do I get to interview anybody big?
No. You get to... Well, no. I'm just kidding. I was trying to come up with a joke and I just failed.
No, so. I'm sure the answer is no. You give that to the...
But I'm reserving the monkey interviews for myself.
Oh, okay.
As
wow.
I did
what
at, as
gonna,
I did
I'm
at C2E2.
I'm going to get like nothing. I'm not going to talk to any cute animals.
But no, so we got that.
Not any super famous... Anyway.
I know. So we got that. And we're going to be streaming a lot of the panels as well. So from the Madison Square Garden, Hammerstein Ballroom, and the Javits Center, etc., all the big stuff. And then Alexis's news team is going to be on the scene reporting every effing thing that's happening.
We are going to be flooding the zone. Yeah.
Oh, are you gonna,
so like? If
I feel like you should just rent another hotel space just so you can. That was like the best. Like the best part of San Diego was like the newsroom, which was just a hotel room that had the best view.
And the steady flow of room service food.
Oh, yeah. Amazing. Sorry.
So I was just saying, if a mouse farts in the Javits we'll Center during New York Comic Con. You will hear about it on Sci-Fi Wire.
Yeah, it's eating some pizza,
mm-hmm.
and it cuts one.
Mm-hmm.
You're gonna know.
Top story.
Wow. Yeah, I actually had this thought that I was gonna cosplay as like one of the places that we film things. Something else that's in the building is they make the things that you hold like the takeout food in to keep things warm, like pizza boxes and stuff. And I was like, I should buy one of those and then like put a bunch of empty pizza boxes in it and dress like a seamless person. And then I was going to like walk around and like...
That's your cosplay.
And like cosplay, like giving pizza to like Ninja Turtles and stuff. Like, and like that's it. And it'd just be like pictures of like the Ninja Turtles like getting pizza from me and like paying me money.
What if there are no Ninja Turtles there?
I'm sure that, but like it doesn't matter. You can give it to anybody. Like,
it's
like,
meaningless.
Wow.
It's like, oh, hey,
that's stormtrooper. That's a really strong position to take.
Have some pizza. There's no link between stormtroopers and pizza. Then what do you do?
Oh, you're telling me that there's no stormtrooper that likes pizza. You don't think that, like, stormtroopers like pizza?
I mean, the theory, well, I guess it depends on what era you're talking about, because the theory being, like, if during the Clone War era, if one of them doesn't like pizza, then none of them do. Because they're all clones.
Again, I just feel like this is a really big assumption. I mean, like, you know, like we have a twin that works in our very company, in our very group. I assume that he and his twin brother are not identical in every way.
Twins and clones are not the same thing.
They're absolutely not. Although I will say, if Captain Phasma likes it, then it's possible that everybody else does.
Okay.
Yeah. See? She sets the pace.
See?
I bet
you Phasma. Like,
any pizza in the Star Wars universe? Answer me that.
Well,
Han smuggled them all.
Not yet. There you go. See? I didn't have the answer. Alexis did.
It's not canon.
This is ridiculous.
Unacceptable.
Well, imagine then the look on a stormtrooper's face. Like, they'll take the helmet off and be like, the face they'll make will be one that you can't see because we're on a podcast. But anyway, we've belabored this a very long time. Alexis. What's going on with you this week?
Well, like Adam said, it's a lot of prep that we're doing right now for New York Comic Con. Really exciting stuff coming up over there. So hope everybody stays tuned to what we've got in store. Personally, though, for this past week, I have been slowly diving into the DC Universe streaming service.
In what way?
So I was one of the early adopters. I subscribed to it. Got 15 months all in the can over there. But I've just been checking out the different offerings that they've got. And with mixed sort of feelings over all of it, I've been checking out, well, first of all, I've been watching all the Linda Carter stuff for Wonder Woman, which is pretty fantastic.
Yeah.
Very interesting to see how everything has evolved, continues to evolve, and what has stayed the same. But also just sussing out what they've got in store in the service. And I think it's an interesting first effort from DC, but it's also very much a work in progress. It can be a little frustrating, you know, to discover that the curated section of the comics is a little bit thin at this point, but we're told it's going to grow. But diving into a couple of the Batman stuff there, you know, it launched right after Batman Day, seeing what else they've got in that video library. So slowly been checking out what's there and what I've been wanting to put on my list.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Are you looking forward to any of the new series in particular? Is there, like, of the ones they've announced, is there any one that you're like, that's the one?
Well, obviously Titans. I mean, they've made a big splash with that, right?
Sure.
Bring out all the cuss words.
Yeah, that's it. That's true. Man, boy, the Batman universe really is, there's just some stuff happening there, I feel
there
like.
There is.
Lately.
Lots to talk about Batman and everything going on with that, huh?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Him and his huge crossover with Mario Kart. Anyway, that's the end of that segment.
Bye. No, it's not.
Wait,
no,
what?
It's not.
It's not?
Danny.
Then what?
What are you geeking out about this week?
Man, I thought you'd never ask, except that you always ask. What am I geeking out about? I also was utilizing a streaming service, but I was using Shudder. They put out a sequel, exclusive so far, to Shudder. It is the sequel to a movie called Hell House LLC, which I just found out yesterday is produced by a friend of one of our online video producers. Erin LoCascio, one of her friends, is the producer on these films. And I did not know about the first one until I saw the second one being announced. It got retweeted around a lot. And I said, oh, well, like the first one's on Amazon. I'll watch it. And I was like, oh, it's found footage, so it probably won't be good. But then it was great. Every once in a blue moon, I feel like there's a really good found footage movie out there. And this one really worked very well. The conceit is this team of people is moving into a creepy old hotel because they're going to repurpose it to be a like a haunted house for Halloween so that their company can make money. And there's an issue with the company. There's conflict within the group. And also maybe the hotel is, yes, corporate horror. I live with it every day. Maybe the hotel is haunted in some fashion. But
in the end, it turns out to be like old man Withers who just wanted those kids off his
property.
And
I would have gotten away with it, too. If you weren't for you darn kids.
It's like they take the mask off the ghost. And yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And that editor-in-chief. Whoa. Anyway, I don't want to say which way it goes.
But that is the way it goes.
Sure, maybe.
The Scooby-Doo ending.
Or does it? Doo-doo-doo. Anyway, I was really surprised by how much I liked it, and so I immediately was like chomping at the bit, waiting, counting the seconds for the second one to come out. That was also really great. So yeah, I mean, like, if you're looking for good found footage, I would highly recommend both the original Hell House LLC.
They should do like thematic sequels, like Hell House Incorporated, Hell House IPO.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right.
See, this is, you got to think bigger.
Yeah, you've really got to think about it from a tax perspective.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean? Like, your tax person doesn't even understand the tax code anymore. So you've really got to, plan ahead.
When you're planning a hell house,
yeah,
you got to think about these things.
Yeah, franchisable.
When your nation's a hell house, really, what other choice do you have? Anyway, hey, let's talk about the news.
Sure.
I feel like we should start with Captain Marvel because that was sort of like the first big story of the week. There was previously like Entertainment Weekly and Brie Larson were like, hey, let's break the internet. And then showed like a bunch of pictures and everyone was like, where's the trailer? And then this week the trailer showed up. And Captain Marvel, just all kinds of wild things happened.
Yeah.
Captain Marvel crashing into Blockbusters, punching old ladies in the face.
Yeah.
Sam Jackson looking young. Like,
Clark Gregg looking young.
Yeah. Do you think that they'll ever, like, can they make it look better than they do at this point? Like, genuinely, like, I looked at Sam Jackson and I was like, that's basically what he looked like.
It's hard to tell, though, because
it's pretty close.
But we get, like, the thing with me with Peter Cushing, you know, when they did the facial thing for Rogue One, was in bits and pieces, it looked dead on. But you sit there and watch it, and especially if someone's like doing an extended bit of dialogue or something, it tends to get a little uncanny valley on you.
Yeah.
So I don't.
But
I mean,
but Peter Cushing is also dead.
No, I know. But
I feel like that makes a difference.
But
like,
I'm saying that's been the case with me in general when it's all of this stuff. It's like if it's shown in like a quick shot or something like that, and even like a couple seconds, it's like, oh, okay, I can totally buy that. And then if it's really the focus of the shot and someone's speaking for an extended period of time, that's when you start to get a little bit of like, that's not right. So it's going to be interesting to see because I think that Nick Fury plays a big part in this movie.
Yeah.
So we're going to get a lot of young Samuel L. Jackson, and it'll be interesting to see how that plays.
Yeah. I mean, I would say I think it's come a long way since X-Men 3.
Oh, my God.
That's the very first time I remember really seeing that. I don't know if they had ever really done it in a major film prior to that movie. It's definitely, I feel like they made a big deal about it.
Yeah.
And they only did it for a couple minutes because it was so goddamn expensive.
Right.
Even to do it for 2 or 3 minutes.
Yeah. My issue with that, though, is, you know, after a while, like the first couple of times you see it, it's like, oh, no, the novelty's there. Hey, look, you know, Robert Downey Jr. looks really, really young. But then after a while, you just can't focus on anything else but that. It just sucks the life out of the room. Just all the attention is on that. And, you know, I do agree that Peter Cushing did look really creepy with the uncanny valley in the eyes and everything. But, you know, I thought Michael Douglas was pretty okay in Ant-Man and the Wasp. But yeah, too much of that for me after a while just gets distracting.
So we'll have to see. Because,
yeah.
I mean, and the other thing is, too, that's also informed by the fact that we know. That's the interesting thing. It's like, what if you put someone who had never seen older Samuel L. Jackson?
Oh, like this is the first movie they saw in the Marvel Universe.
We have that disconnect because we know what he looks like now. you know, but it's...
Here's an interesting thing, though. I have friends who had no idea that Peter Cushing was dead.
What?
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, people who weren't even, like, major Star Wars fans. And, you know, they didn't really notice anything was off. Like, they completely bought that, but
see,
I guess...
It's all metatextual.
Completely is.
Fascinating.
But other things happened in the trailer, too.
Oh, like what?
Like Brie Larson as Captain Marvel. So I think
I just think it's really interesting.
Yes,
I guess we could talk about the woman,
star
like,
of the film. No, and one of the things that's interesting is that it's becoming very clear. You know, they've said this wasn't going to be an origin story, and like what structure the story is going to take, which is basically that Captain Marvel has been out with the those guys, the Kree and Skrulls. I mean, with the Kree. You know, doing her Captain Marvel thing, and then comes back to Earth and remembers life on Earth as she had before, as opposed to like starting from the beginning when she's powerless and then gets her powers as the usual superhero structure, introductory structure is. So that's really interesting, and it's going to be interesting to see how that plays.
Yeah, I think the fact that they said in the 90s kind of by default sets it up as an origin story of sorts for the entire MCU. I mean, that's not if you're counting, you know, Captain America going back to World War II or anything like that. But I mean, you said something in the 90s, it's like, well, this predates everything. It puts into question what Nick Fury knew, you know, with Iron Man and with all of this coming up. So yeah, I think that by itself just makes it a default origin story of sorts.
And in a way, and I think what's sort of interesting is that, so there for a very long time was a bit of a theme for Carol Danvers, which is Carol Danvers can't catch a break. In the comics, she had a lot of bad luck. So she was doing her thing. She's Ms. Marvel. Then Rogue comes along, takes her whole ass memory, the whole thing. She doesn't know who she is anymore. Now Rogue's got the struggle where like she thinks that she's Carol and she's struggling with the memories. And,
but she has the powers,
right? And she has the powers and Carol becomes binary and like there's that whole story, and then eventually she gets her memories back, but she's like a little weird, and she gets like accidentally pregnant, and then the Avengers are like mazel tov, and that's awkward, and then she's like an alcoholic, and like yeah, like she just goes through a lot of really tough stuff, and things don't really turn around for her until House of M, which is a comic book story where Scarlet Witch kind of like resets the universe and like everything's different, and one of the biggest changes is that now Carol is like the most powerful, most important superhero in the Marvel universe at that point. And at that moment, they start to transition away and eventually get to the point where, you know, Kelly Sue DeConnick comes in and writes her as Captain Marvel. And then we sort of get the incarnation that we've been living with for the last few years. But it seems to me that in this trailer, they're sort of introducing the fact that she's missing some of her memory.
Right.
So it feels like they're taking part of that story, but using it perhaps in a different way and in part as a vehicle to give her, to do some of the origin lifting without it being the focus of the whole film.
Right, right. Yeah. And that's new. It's going to be, you know, we haven't had a superhero introduced in this way in the MCU yet, really.
Yeah, that's nice. It's not like, you know, like I like Doctor Strange and I like Iron Man, but they kind of get like, it's a very similar story.
Yeah.
And I was concerned at first that maybe they were going to sort of do the same thing.
But see, you forgot to touch on the most important point in this trailer, which is where the hell is her sash?
Oh, wow. Where is that
really,
sash?
At the end of the day.
We did get the Mohawk helmet, though. I mean, that's...
We do.
That was cool. I was pretty psyched about that, honestly.
Yeah.
Of all the stylistic flourishes.
I had forgotten until I looked on Facebook, but there are a number of characters who are in this movie. One of them is a character played by an actress named Gemma Chan, and that character is Minerva. And I don't know if Alexis, I would assume you would not know this. Adam,
I didn't
perhaps
know this.
You did know this.
I know where you're going
I
with this.
I didn't know this, but the former editor in chief of Sci-Fi Wire back when it was Blaster, and also the magazine Sci-Fi Wire way back in the day, Scott Edelman, was the person that came up with this character.
Yep.
That's crazy. It's a really kind of a cool sci-fi connection to this movie.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
It was fun. He was geeking out on Facebook about it because he's just like, this is a character that I created, and now she's on TV or on a movie, you know, in a big trailer. And it was really
cool.
Yeah,
it's really, it's so interesting. And Scott was the guy who kind of like, he was my entrance into the realm of sci-fi at the company. So it's kind of neat.
All hail Scott.
Yeah, like he really did. I don't know if he listens to this podcast, but like, I'm really excited. I'm really happy for him. This is really neat. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I assume it's Marvel, so, you know, they own all the rights. I assume he's not getting any kickbacks, but right. You know, but it's still cool.
Yeah.
Like that's a really awesome thing to be able to see on screen, especially for a movie that has like probably some of the biggest buzz of the last 5 years.
I mean, it's interesting. I was wondering about like how this movie's going to do. You know, because
I was about to say great undoubtedly, but I guess I don't know that.
Yeah, I don't know that for sure because it makes me wonder about like the what's the word I'm looking for? The market penetration, for lack of a better term, of Carol Danvers' Captain Marvel. Like, I think people of a certain generation know that character super well, but beyond that, like you know, when Wonder Woman comes out, everybody knows Wonder Woman. Everybody and their mother knows who Wonder Woman is, or Batman, or Superman, or whatever. I mean, Marvel has a good track record with that. They turned Guardians of the Galaxy into a huge hit, and nobody knew who the hell those guys were.
I have a weird specific criticism, which I've had since they started releasing images, which is that the suit's very busy. There's a lot of lines that didn't exist in the comic book.
Hmm.
And it is actually like if you're trying to do movie realism cosplay of it, it's harder. Carol is a pretty common cosplay.
Yeah,
like you see a lot of her and have for the last 5 years or so since she became Captain Marvel and Kelly Sue was writing that book, it became a thing that you saw everywhere. So I wonder what's going to happen if people are going to feel like they have to reinvent, and I wonder what the impact of cosplay has. Like, you know, Harley Quinn, I mean, I feel like a lot of her popularity came from the fact that, like, again, wherever you went to a con, you knew you were going to see like at least a dozen Harley Quinns. Same thing with Deadpool. Like and everywhere Spider-Gwen you went, you would see a Spike. I think eventually they'll make a Spider-Gwen movie just out of the fact that like, yeah, like there's so much of her. But yeah, Carol has been a very common cosplay. So I'm curious as to like overcomplicating the costume, if that will have an impact or not.
Well, it reminds me of, in at least not in like the color scheme, but the makeup of it reminds me of the old X-Men costumes, like in the first X-Men movie,
when they were
these like motorcycle jackety type of
outfits. It did remind me of that a little bit. But so did I felt like if you took the headpiece away, Hela and Thor Ragnarok has also got a little bit of that vibe.
Oh sure,
yeah, she does.
I mean, those things are probably.
But you should never take away her headpiece. No one should ever take away that headpiece.
Oh yeah, at your own risk, I would say.
Absolutely, yeah. Everyone should have a headpiece like that.
Oh man, I just saw on Facebook someone had done like a full like. Cosplay of it, and it was like 100 photos easily, and the whole last part was like the construction of that headpiece, and it's amazing the amount of work that people will put in. Is there anything else that really jumped at y'all from the trailer, anything you were like, gotta talk about this wow trailer?
No, not a trailer, but the poster had that little Easter egg of the cat.
Oh yeah,
yeah,
she's a cat lover.
Well, or is she?
Well, we'll see.
Don't we find out? Well, I mean, I guess it's a spoiler for the comics that have been out for a while, but the cat is not a cat entirely.
Yeah. I mean, we'll see. I mean, we don't know what they'll do. But
oh, my God.
But cats do appear. Power Girl also has a cat, or at least did for a long time. I don't know if she still does, but back in the day, the Justin Gray, Jimmy Palmiotti, Amanda Connor version had a cat. And I think also Wonder Woman sometimes has a cat like lurking around, so... I don't know. Superhero ladies love cats.
Indeed.
That's what
Isn't everyone?
I mean, I don't know.
Except for me, because I'm allergic.
Well, I mean, like, I would, if I was a superhero, I would have a cat.
I have a cat, and it's named R2-D2.
Is that true?
Absolutely, that is his name.
That's cool.
He doesn't meow. He beep, beep, boops.
Wow. I have a cat. His name is Claudius Maximus Aurelius Rex, first of his name. But you call him Claude if you want to. Shout out to my cat, who I'm sure is listening to this podcast. Anyway, I mean, like, I feel like the trailer, I mean, it certainly had a lot of people watching. I think it's somewhere like 35 million already. So, yeah. I mean, we'll see. We'll find out. It better do well. It feels like it's kind of important for it to succeed.
You know, you're not going to make a lot of money betting against Marvel at this point in their cinematic life. So I don't think that there's any doubt that it will certainly do well. The question is, like, how well, and will it be this massive, explosive thing that it would be nice if it were.
Granny Punchers are going to love it.
Yeah.
Hey, do y'all like video games?
They're okay. I love video games.
It's true. Well, you do.
I do.
That's true. That's like that was your meat and potatoes for a long time.
For a long time.
So two things happened this week of the gaming variety. One, Nintendo decided, we're just so tired of letting people play games online for free. Let's charge them. But also, cloud saves and 20 old NES games that are all two-player in some fashion. You can play them online with your friends. And then also, kind of related to Nintendo, because they had been doing an NES Classic and then a SNES Classic, Sony was like, So they announced that they were going to do a PlayStation Classic that's coming out in December. That is also going to have 20 games baked in.
Did they say which games at this point?
They said some of them.
Okay.
So the big ones they named so far would be Tekken 3. There's a Ridge Racer game in there, and Final Fantasy VII, I would say, is probably like the really, that's like the big one. So my first question is, would you buy it? Would you buy it's $100. It's coming out like December 5th or something. Would you buy $100 20 game PlayStation Classic?
No, but not because it's not cool. I don't have enough time to play the video games for the current console that I own. You know, like I say that jokingly, but it's also kind of true. Like, I have games that I've spent $60 on that I have not finished, you know, that I bought in the past few months. So while I would love to dip back into some of these old PlayStation games, I think that I can't in good conscience do that. I would feel bad. I would feel like I was neglecting the games I already have, which is an interesting thing, though, because I think as we get further along in the cycle, like, the thing about the old NES games is that a lot of them were very pick up and play. You know, oh, I'm just going to play this for a little while and it'll be fun and haha, I'll remember that and everything. But you get into the PlayStation generation and those games are a little more involved. And Final Fantasy, that's a huge investment of time.
Well, here's a question. Does it change it if there's save states instead of, you know, if it's like if you can take a screenshot kind of thing instead?
Not for me, like
you would with an emulator rather than having to get to a save point. Like, you could just save at any moment and turn it off.
No, just because, again, like, Final Fantasy VII, giant game. You know, it took a long time to get through that when I played it the first time. So it's not a situation where I'm going to be like, oh, I want to play Final Fantasy VII for 10 minutes and then I can go about my day. You know, it's like it's an investment, and I'm already invested in Spider-Man and No Man's Sky and all these other games that I've been trying to, you know, give their due lately. So,
yeah, but those are also Sony things. Give Sony all your money.
Apparently. Well, I only have a PS4, so it's, you know, I'm a one console household currently. But yeah, no, I would love to, because I think revisiting those games would be fun. It's just my gaming, as we get older and more involved in adult life, our time for gaming truncates, and unfortunately I can't. There's only so much of me to go around.
It's like you always say, Captain. If something's important, you make the time. That's from Star Trek Generations. It's actually a thing that Kirk never said. It's a really weird thing.
I will freely admit that playing old PlayStation games is not on the top of my priority list. As fun as it is and as cool as it is, there are other things that require my attention.
Like running Sci-Fi Wire.
Oh, okay, exactly. I guess. I don't know. Would you? I mean, like, if you were going to get it, Alexis, I feel like if I ask everybody, everyone's going to be like, I'm too old and cheap. Like, what games would you want to be on there?
Oh, I'd love Crash Bandicoot to be over there. I mean, they haven't announced it, so they've announced 5 of the 20, I'm not mistaken.
Crash Bandicoot feels like a no-brainer because it was, for a long time, the closest thing that they had to a mascot.
Right.
They used to have...
and a platformer.
Yeah.
The first real platformer they've had, right?
And they had commercials where, like, he would be outside of, like, Nintendo headquarters with the megaphone being like, come on up, plumber boy. It was great. It didn't stick, but I enjoyed that era. Is there anything else you would want?
Resident Evil, right?
Oh, okay. Yeah, I guess so.
I want to see that in there. But I'm completely with Adam on this. I mean, I've got a PS4 Pro, and I've got a Switch. And I'm not quite sure if I have the time to dive into this. I'd probably get it and just have it lying around for when people come over.
Yeah.
You know, if they want to play. I mean, that's great. But whether or not I'll actually be able to dive deep into that and really just, you know, play myself, I'm not sure if I've got the time for it. I mean, I know it sounds really okay to say that, but it's really true.
I wonder if I wonder who the audience will be, though.
Yeah,
because like, here's a question: like, will people who never played those games before pick it up? They might,
right?
Like, I mean, like, I don't know if there's any reason not to. I mean, those games are good if you're just going to have it as like something that's really plug and play. If it's the right games, like, so, like, you know, they announce those five, but like, you know, if Metal Gear Solid is on there, if Castlevania Symphony of the Night is on there, which to me, like, between those two and Final Fantasy VII, those are like the reason that Sony became the juggernaut it did. Like, right. It's the reason that, like, they are still at this point the number one console company in the world.
But I think the audience for this is going to be, I'm sure some people will pick it up and play it, but I think it's definitely more a nostalgia play, and it's a nostalgia play for people who may have moved on from gaming, I think, at this point, or some, because I think that there's a lot of people who grew up in that PlayStation 1 generation who haven't, you know, as we said, as you get older, it kind of requires a certain level of commitment to remain a gamer, or to remain someone who's an active game player. And not everybody does that. And I think there are going to be a lot of people who are going to be like, oh, man, remember when we used to sit around in the dorm and play PlayStation all day, and I'm going to buy this for $100 and relive those days. And I think that's kind of the sweet spot in terms of who they're going to get buying this console.
Yeah, that's exactly actually what happened to me with Nintendo. So I had, you know, played the family computer way back in the 80s. I had complete drought, like no video games at all up until the Wii came out. And it was all those vintage games on Wii that you suddenly get from the virtual arcade.
Console.
Yeah, that just did it for me. And I think we got to remember that the same way that Nintendo serves that function, you know, to folks like myself. You know, in my generation, you know, my sister, her first console was the PlayStation.
Right.
So I know that she and her friends will be just lapping this up, because to them, that's nostalgia. So for every person, you know, who broke into gaming with Nintendo, or even you go way back, Atari, you know, you have folks who first discovered gaming through PlayStation. So I think that is a captive market right there.
Yeah. I mean, here's my criticism. I believe the mechanism of the console itself is that, like, you press the buttons for stuff to happen, and, like, obviously there's no disc to put in there. So, like, man, like, I don't know, they should have still had the button that says open. It should have opened and you could, like, put your weed in there, because, you know, like,
yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I just don't know why you wouldn't have that. That
or
just
slice
seems
of
like,
pizza.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
you're
slice
of pizza. There you go. Mm-hmm. You put it, yeah, there's plenty of room for pizza. It's a mini thing, guys. You know, I mean, I guess if it was like an Elio's, you could get it in there.
You know, or little pancakes.
Wow, all right. I like this.
Yeah.
I love this plan. What could we, like, put there inside of
Sony, I hope you're listening.
Because
this is gold.
Hot tips.
Yeah.
And you press a button and it heats it up.
Whoa.
There you go. That's a PlayStation 2 version of it.
Wow.
But that's what I
really
just wondered that, like I said,
today.
Like, as we get further into this, like, someday there's going to be like a Xbox 360 classic or something, and the game, but it's just,
well,
like,
they,
the games
but
that
they
I
don't
played
really
on
need
Xbox,
that, because Microsoft's actually good about their backwards,
I know,
compatibility.
But I'm just saying,
that's,
like,
that's the whole thing.
Theoretically, as the generations move on, it's like, what are the games that are going to be, you know, all those classic consoles, when we reach that stage, we'll have to have like online capability, because that's such a huge part of the gaming generation.
Big, complicated conversation.
Right? That's what I'm saying.
Because that's also the question of, like, how many games do you really own?
Yeah, yeah. So it's just this whole, it'll be interesting to see as we move forward in time and in generations that become this classic console. I mean, here's my thing. Actually, here's the number one thing that I thought coming out of this PlayStation thing.
Please spit out the truth.
Where the hell is the Dreamcast Classic?
Oh,
give
great
me that.
Question. Great question. I mean,
give
we're
me
not
a
there
Dreamcast
yet.
Console.
Well, when they do the next round,
yeah.
When PlayStation 2 Classic comes out, there'll be a Dreamcast
there
Classic.
There you go. Because that's what, I mean, man, that is a console that needs.
All right, what goes on your Dreamcast Classic?
Oh, jeez.
Like, give me a top five.
Soul Calibur.
Okay.
For sure. Crazy Taxi.
Crazy Taxi, okay.
That was a great one. Seaman.
Wow, really? But
yeah.
In the top five?
No, well, just for the weirdness of it. I think it would be so. It's such an artifact.
All right.
Of that era.
You putting Shenmue on there?
Sure. Yeah. Shenmue, and then I think for me personally, and this is there was a hockey game. You don't remember NFL Blitz, which was like the 3-on-3, like, over the top arcade.
Oh, and there was an arcade
NHL
game
hits
too.
Or something. I can't remember what they called it, but. And that was just a thing long ago when I worked at UGO, Unified Gamers Online, and the Dreamcast came out. We had epic marathon one-on-one hockey things, tournaments with that game. And it was, the Dreamcast was often how we settled disputes in the office via Soul Calibur or the hockey game. It's like if whoever wins.
This is amazing. Yeah. See, now I have a specific fighting game franchise that vanished after the Dreamcast.
Masters of Terror Sky? No, that was a PlayStation.
That was PlayStation. No, I would would have to have Power Stone.
I don't even remember Power Stone. I'm sorry.
Oh my gosh, it was one of the best. It was like a four player. It was like Smash Brothers before there was really Smash Brothers.
Oh,
like,
interesting. I have vague memories of that.
It was really fun.
Yeah.
It was a really fun, entertaining game, and there were two of them, was Power Stone and Power Stone 2.
So that's surprise. Like, yeah, I mean, it is weird too, because it's like the PlayStation is still a going concern, whereas like your Nintendo NES or whatever is not. So I want the Dreamcast classic. Give me that. And that is one I would actually probably buy.
All right.
Yeah.
There you go.
Because again, you know, game like Crazy Taxi, game like Soul Calibur, just throw it on and play for a little bit. It's fun.
Dreamcast was the very first system I ever had fully modded so that I could go to Chinatown and like buy all of the games, the Japanese versions before they came out in the States.
There you go.
That's how I got Street Fighter 3 Third Strike, one of the greatest fighting games of all time, months before it was available on console.
Way
in the United States. Why I'm so cool. Anyway, yeah, that's quite crazy. I don't even know. I don't even know how to talk about it. We're going to talk about Batman for like a minute. I just don't know how we don't talk about it, because it was such a big story. It was so, it was just, I mean, and leaned to the right in a way, I suppose.
I don't have much to say about it. Not that I have anything wrong with it.
There is a debate of what they did after the fact and what they did in the first place, and like, you know, what do you do? So like, DC was like, oh, we're going to put out our Black series. This is going to be our new mature label, dealing still with superhero characters. So, you know, it's like kind of like another side of the die, just like Vertigo is another side of the die. And they've got all these different series coming out, all these writers coming in, you know, like there's like Kelly Sue DeConnick's going to come and do like a Wonder Woman story. And they got like, it's just like an epic ass ton of like really interesting things they're planning. And they started it this week with Batman Damned number one, which is a Brian Nazarello joint with Lee Bermejo. So these are like two heavy hitters in the comic book industry. And the story is that Joker's dead. Batman has lost account of some time. He's maybe losing his mind. He's trying to figure out who killed the Joker. And that's an interesting story. But for some reason, they decided that like he's having a conversation, and instead of like a view of his face, it's a junk view. It is the buffalo shot, the swimsuit area. And in fact, in the original release of it, both digitally and physically, like you can, though it's in shadow, you can very visibly see the outline of his genitals. You definitely can see. You can see that he's circumcised. It's pretty clear.
Okay.
And then there was a lot of talk about it, and then DC changed it on the streaming service and said that all future reprintings would also have a new version where you don't see his genitals. And now the question is, A, should they have done this in the first place? And B, once it was out of the gate, should they have then like censored it in this way?
Well, I think it's a real pity that this is what's getting sort of the lion's share of the attention, because the issue is stunning. The book is absolutely stunning. The art is beautiful. The story is just really intriguing. It's this strange sort of supernatural horror thing going on with Batman. And I mean, truth be told, I mean, the nudity in it is really just, it's just sort of like throwaway to the entire thing.
It's a panel.
Absolutely. And you can say that it's gratuitous, but you know, taking it in the context of the entire issue, it's really nothing. It's nothing that you don't see an image, you know, in the gazillion, nude panels that you would find in any other mature story over there. It's just that this happens to be a very iconic character. But I think it's just sad that with this tremendous piece of art and work that is out there, you know, everyone seems to have focused on this.
Oh, our Puritan culture.
That it is interesting, right? Like, well, like, here's what I'll say. Like, in Britain, right? Like, yeah, like, they'll just, like, you know, men are naked, you know mm-hmm. what I mean? Like, and that's it, you know? you'll see like the full thing. But male nudity in particular is very weird in America.
Yeah.
We really don't like it.
No, it makes everybody uncomfortable. It's like when I think when it
like there's yeah, like there's like there's an inherent on, violence. Yeah,
anytime
to
it happened on Game of Thrones, people online were just like, "Ooh," you know, it's like this feeling of, "Oh my God, what do they do?" You know, and it's just like, meanwhile, that show is showing like,
yeah,
dozens of female bodies, but they show a penis, and everybody like,
yeah,
I don't, people even freak out. It's just this edge to it that everybody just gets kind of like uncomfortable with,
and it's the same weird double standard that exists in comics too. Yeah. I mean, just, you know, naked women left and right, yeah, and yet, you know, you show a penis and suddenly it's just, you know, everything goes
and
nuclear.
They're like, well, what was the purpose of this? Like, right. And that was sort of what they ended up saying was, yeah, like, there should have been a purpose. And I mean, I guess I kind of get, I mean, like, I had a moment, like, this is like what I thought about it was like, I mean, yeah, like as soon as I, like, if I was Batman, if I was like wearing that costume, like I think like the very second that I was out of sight, that thing would be swinging in the breeze, because it's like, it seems like it would be very uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Like you feel like you'd be really sweaty in that spot.
Probably
like,
wearing a dance belt most of the time or something.
Like
I
would immediately want to get some air. You know what I mean? Like, well, so thing, in a thing, way, if they had played it that way, if they had just like, you know, like it is weird that like, it's just like it shows up in a panel and there is no like explanation
But that's
it.
Okay. But that's the thing is like, we have this thing of like the human body. If we show it, there has to be a purpose. It's not like he was engorged and getting ready to penetrate someone, you know, so it's not it's not pornographic. Ooh. It's, but I'm saying, you know, see, this is exactly what I'm talking about. Like, we can't even say those, that talk about that without it being like a joke, but like it's a part of the human body. No one's ever been like, oh no, don't show Batman's ear, you know, but
his pointy ears. But you also got to look at the context of that scene, because he shows up in a Batcave, he completely just doffs all of his clothes, but he's talking to his like computer, asking them to do like a vitals check on him. So it's pretty germane, it's pretty organic to what's going on there. I mean, you got to see that this guy is not like hemorrhaging on the inside or anything, you know, and so it's legit, you know, he's naked there, you just happen to see the full Monty, you know. I mean, it's not like it's an out of nowhere thing. Completely makes sense, you know, in that scene. It just went a little bit more graphic than what you would see.
I guess it's, you know what it is? I think that to a degree in my mind, and maybe this is me being conservative, they've never done it before.
Sure.
So, like, if you're going to do it, like, I just, like, what was that I would be curious to know what the conversation was when they decided to do this. Like, did they think that nonchalant was the way to go? Did they have a conversation where they said, we want to do this? So how to, like... Like, it's interesting.
Did they have conversations about length, girth?
Wow.
Like, you know, personal grooming habits.
I mean, he's a billionaire. He doesn't really have to work with that much. Yeah. But, you know.
I think my thing with DC here, though, is that it just seemed to be so wishy-washy with it. Because
That's the problem. Now I feel really weird that they took it back. Yeah. Like, that's like.
Well, that's silly.
It wasn't just the fact that they took it back. It's the fact that after this thing broke, when it was released on digital, it was already sort of blurred out there. So they didn't even put out the entire art as it was drawn, as it was conceptualized in their digital edition of it. So to actually see it, you needed to go to a comic book shop and get the actual book. So even that, to me, sort of signaled a hesitation, but also, I don't know, my whole thing is, if you're going to do this, you know, go all in, you know, like stand behind that decision.
And let me bring up my soapbox. I'm going to stand on it for one second.
Go for it. While you're doing that, I'm actually going to look up on eBay and see how much it's selling for.
How many people murdered? How many broken bones? How many shattered skulls? How many acts of horrific violence have we seen in the pages of not even like the Black Label comic books, like mass market comic books? Violence, 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 killing, blood, breaking bones, etc. Nobody's got a problem with that. Nobody's like, DC's not like, hey man, we need to make it so Batman doesn't break that guy's leg. You know, it's like, this is why I'm on my soapbox. I think it's just such a weird dichotomy in American culture that we can show that all day and nobody bats an eye, but show a part of the human body in an adult, a specifically labeled for mature audiences comic book, and people freak the F out.
Well, one thing you got to admit is it's turned into an instant collector's issue.
Sure.
Because, you know, now that they are going to remove this from every possible reprinting and everyone's going to want to snap this up. I mean, from the numbers we've seen, it's what, 115,000 piece are still out there that you can get.
It's selling on eBay between about $30 and $50
right now. So I was at Midtown Comics two days ago, and they're starting to ration it out. You know, you can only get one per customer, and there still are a couple of issues out there. But yeah, I mean, if you're looking to jack up the price of, you know, your issue and make something an instant collector's issue, this is the way to go.
Yeah, it is kind of weird in that way. Yeah, I don't know. I feel like once they did it, it was like, well, I mean, cat's out of the bag, guys. It's kind of like, it always makes me feel weird. It's like when the Kindle first came out, right? I remember very early on, there was a story where a bunch of people had bought a book because the Kindle was designed to be online wherever possible. One day, like, all the people that bought this book, like, the book had disappeared, and they got an email from Amazon being like, oh, hey, sorry, the company that sold the book didn't actually have the license to do it, so we've just credited your account. And the book happened to be George Orwell's 1984, and it was like, oh,
yeah,
y'all just revealed that you could just take a book away, like, and be like, here's your money, but you can't have that book. Like, and it does in a way kind of feel, especially like that more and more people are using digital market as a means to read comics, that, yeah, like, it's going to be harder to be able to keep a tight hold on this stuff, which raises a lot of questions because, yeah, it is. It's more and more difficult to have a physical copy of a thing because most people are poor. Most people live in a tiny space. They don't have room for like a billion comics or a billion books or a billion anything, you know?
Yeah, but more than that, I also see it as a slap in the face to the creators. Just the way that I think is sort of like, you know, this was envisioned in a certain way. It was drawn in a certain way. It was drawn beautifully, you know? And when you translate that to the digital medium, it's like, well, we'll censor it. You know, I mean, that's not the original vision.
But this is, I mean, like, it is interesting because it does, I think, this is an actual conversation in a way, I would say, about, like, if men's rights wanted to talk about something, why wouldn't you talk about this?
Right.
This feels relevant to me. This feels important, right? Like, the way in which we discuss and show men's bodies and the way that we kind of, in a way, shame that body is, a problem.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's actually worth talking about. But instead, like, we get, like, we don't talk about that. And then we get the flip, like, to move away from this a little bit, like, they put out a new Doctor Who trailer this week, and like in the trailer, they have to make a point of like all of the men agreeing that the Doctor who is a woman is the one in charge. And they have a video of Jodie Whittaker reading the mean tweets. And it's like, well, we can talk about this all day long, right? But we can't talk about this other thing. And it's like, well, shouldn't, I mean, like, and to be honest, like, I'm ready to just, like, aren't you ready to watch Doctor Who now?
Oh my God, so much.
I'm ready to just, like, I don't care about this anymore. This is so exhausting, but it, like,
but I think
it's, I mean, like, I understand why it has to happen, but in that way, like, I had to be honest, we talk about this stuff all the time, but, like, I don't know. I'm glad we're talking about this. I'm actually kind of glad the Batman thing happened because, like, I feel like this is important. It matters that, like, if we're constantly treating the male body as somehow inherently scary and violent, and not finding a way to normalize it and desexualize a penis, like, where are we?
Right.
Nowhere. I think it's really dangerous. Like, I think it's really unhealthy. And, like, so it's good in a way. I would rather, like, actually genuinely have that conversation than for the millionth time be like, can we all shut up about the doctor being a woman? It's not that weird. Do we all have to be so goddamn sexist about this? Can we just let it, like, do we have to have Jodie Whittaker come out and read, like, can we just watch the show and give it a chance? Like, this, like, I've had this conversation a million goddamn times. It's so frustrating. I'm so frustrated by that. Like, I know why we have to have it, and, like, and I do over and over again, but, man,
yeah,
like,
I hate to break it to you, sir, we do not live in that world.
Yeah,
at least not yet.
I know.
Well, but here's my question. I admittedly am not tapped into every online conversation, but 9 out of the 10 responses I saw to that new Doctor Who trailer were positive about all the content, hated the pop song. That was the only criticism. The number one thing I saw in, like, every critical comment of that trailer was like, why are they putting this, like, mainstream pop song over Doctor Who? It should have been the theme song or some variation of the theme or whatever. But, like, I saw very little, and admittedly, I only scanned the YouTube comments for a minute, so, you know, that's not saying anything, but very little of the straight up, the Doctor should never be a woman, everything's horrible.
And that's sort of the stuff. Okay, so that's, what I would
so
say
maybe
in
there's
response
an evolution
to that
happening
is
or an acceptance at this point.
But then, okay, so if that's what's happening, then is it weird to market the show by having Jodie Whittaker like go and read what mean tweets there are? Or should they at this point just be like, let's just get on with it? Like, do you know what I mean? Like, I don't have an answer. I really genuinely don't know. You know what I mean? But like, again, if I have to be honest, I feel like from the time in which she was cast to now, haven't we talked about that enough? Can't the show just go out and either succeed or fail based on its own merits? Are we going to, honestly, is Jodie Whittaker putting out a video saying this going to change a single mind? I don't believe that it will. At this point, if you're genuinely not going to watch the show because the doctor's a woman, bye.
But I think that it might rally some people who might have been on, might watch the show now as a means of combating that mentality.
I feel
in a way.
Really weird about that.
I know.
I feel a little weird about that. Yeah. About it being like, yes, let's get on the corporate bandwagon to fight sex. Because, like, you know, like,
I mean,
the BBC, it's not like they don't have issues of sexism within their own, you know, within their own ranks. So, like, it's just, it's frustrating.
And Nike was trying to sell shoes with the Colin Kaepernick thing. You know,
and
it wasn't really.
And it's like, in a way, it's, you know, I already own Nike, so it was like nice. And if you really want to burn your shoes, you see them anyway. That's a whole other topic.
But I'm just saying, it's like,
but yeah,
it's like
the corporatization of social movements is big and scary and complicated and not simple.
I don't think you can blame them for leaning into this. I mean, it really is sort of the overriding conversation out there. But you're also sensing that Jodie Whittaker herself is moving away from this conversation. Like, her recent interviews, she's really just been saying gender is irrelevant. You know, she says this is about an alien with two hearts. That's really just about it. But I want to throw out an interesting statistic out there. There was a poll that was put out, you know, for Doctor Who fans and how they feel about this. 12,000 people, if I'm not mistaken. 85% were completely on board with this. So I just think the naysayers may just be a smaller but more vociferous part of this contingent. But for the most part, it seems that majority of people seem to be on board with this. So you are right. You know, we have gone over this topic a lot, you know, and maybe it's time to move forward. But hey, you know, it seems like quite possibly there are more people on board with this than we think.
And it is, listen, it's a big moment regardless. And it hasn't arrived yet. That's the thing. We've been living with the idea of Jodie Whittaker as Doctor Who for a long time. As the Doctor for a long time.
It's okay. They called the Doctor Doctor Who for like the first couple incarnations.
In general.
Okay. You're allowed.
Anyway, as we've been living with this idea of her as the Doctor for a long time, but she's had 2 seconds of screen time at the end of, you know, the Christmas special. So the actual event hasn't happened yet. And I think that's all of this is, you know, once it happens and we've lived in that world for a little while, then it becomes less remarkable, but we're not there yet. And
well,
I guess
you know what it is. Maybe it's that I should accept that it's going to be pretty simple at this point. But like, I don't think like when you say like, oh, you know, the doctor being a woman is just, you know, that gender is not that relevant. It is absolutely relevant, but like it's relevant in the, okay, so she travels to different times and different places. Like, does she encounter a thing? Do you talk about that?
Yeah.
How do you deal with that? That, to me, is an interesting conversation. How are we dealing with the fact that, like, there's a contingent of people who believe in the phrase, get woke, go broke? Like, I'm tired. I'm tired of feeding that. Either it's true or not. I don't believe that it is, and I certainly don't think that – certainly has not held true for television or film. Like, if you want to talk about the realm of comics, but comics has got its own issues with why things sell or don't sell that I don't think have very much to do with politics, to be honest. But like, I'm just, well, there is a conversation to have about the doctor changing gender to a degree, I think within the text, within the narrative. But this metatextual, like in the trailer saying like, it's about time. It's like, yeah, I got it. It was about time for a woman president, too. We didn't get that. But like,
but I think that there's this, and there might also be this element that I've been seeing from a lot of people in a lot of different walks of life on the internet, whether it's politics, entertainment, whatever, that not feeding the trolls hasn't worked in a sense, you know. So this idea of not addressing those things, even if they are a vocal minority, while may not be wrong, it's not the answer or it's not the way to go. And so I think there's an element of that too, where it's like, Yeah, we could just kind of, okay, this is these bunch of, you know, this small collection of really angry people who are very loud, and we can just put them off to the side. But I think that there's a movement and a groundswell of around the idea that you can't, that you shouldn't do that, because it allows that to metastasize over here, and then suddenly you've got Dr. Gate or some crap that nobody wants to deal with.
Yeah, I mean, I don't. It's so different in my mind when there's like a big corporate machine doing this, and an individual or a group of people that are not like corporately based, that are just trying to stay alive and sure. trying to support each other. Like, I'm not like completely against it. I just find myself looking at it and. I feel like I've been waiting since I was 5 years old for this. I always thought the idea of a woman doctor was a great idea. I was like, this always has felt inevitable. This has always felt like something that would be interesting. So I want it, and I just want to be doing that. I just want to be watching it and not having to think about this bullshit anymore.
Yeah.
But from what we've seen so far, I mean, her take on it just seems really fun and quirky.
Yeah. I mean, look, the thing is, like, so the other tricky thing to handle is, like, Chris Chibnall doesn't want to show anything. Like, that's the thing. Yeah. Like, there's nothing in that trailer. Still, they're like, it's a minute of nothing. Like, and that's the thing is, like, it feels like, because he doesn't want people to see any of these 10 episodes that are airing, that instead of showing really anything of detail, he's focusing on the, like, it's about time, and, right. like, sort of, like, riffs on the gender thing, like, because that's a thing people are talking about, so I guess we might as well do that rather than showing them literally anything at all, because we want it to be a surprise. And I feel, again, there was a series that came out on Amazon this week called Forever, and it stars Maya Rudolph and Fred Armisen, and... they don't want anybody to know anything about it. And it's only 8 episodes long, and it takes 2 whole goddamn episodes for it to get to what its conceit is. And when it gets there, I mean, personally, I really loved it. But, like, they have Fred and Maya out there, like, doing comedy stuff everywhere. It is not a comedy series. It is a serious series with, I guess, spoilers, a bit of a genre bent to it. If they had... just said what it was, or just gotten to the point within the first episode. Like, there's no need to spend 2 episodes, and there was no need to say, like, don't tell anybody anything. It's got to be, like, spoiler-free. Like, it's an interesting concept. It's an interesting conversation, and I feel like a lot of people are not going to watch because of that. I feel like the marketing was so bizarre, and in a sort of a similar way, I look at this Doctor Who thing, and it's like, I get it. You don't want anybody to know anything. It's Doctor Who. It's this big thing, but, like... I don't know, man. Like, if it was a lie, and then, like, the Daleks are going to be in an episode, like, who cares? It's not that big. It's fine. I'm like, it's not going to ruin it for me if I find out that the Daleks in, or, like, you know what I mean? Like, sure. Or whatever. Like, I think it's going to, like, I would feel okay. Like, I understand. I know people don't want to know anything, but, like, the spoiler culture. It's like another side of the die that, like, unnecessarily complicates the way these things are promoted and supported and ingested by people who are the viewers. It's so weird.
But Doctor Who is also playing with a little bit of house money, so they can afford to do that.
Yeah.
They don't have to sell people on Doctor Who, the concept.
I know.
You know what I mean? So
except seemingly in this one way, which sort of brings us full circle.
Yeah.
It's so weird. I don't know, man. I just want, I mean, again, I feel like I said it like 6 times, but I just want to start watching the show.
Yeah.
That's it. I just want it to be back. I want to see Jodie in the part. Like, I'm really excited. I feel like I've been waiting my whole life, so.
I wish she was not wearing those pants.
Oh, man.
I love those pants.
I like the pants. You're the holdout. You're pants. The holdout on those pants.
Love the suspenders. Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
I love the suspenders. Alexis, I have a short, I don't know if you're aware of this, but I have a short pants.
Phobia?
Aversion.
Not phobia. Aversion is a good word
for it. There you
go. To me, it's like...
He's afraid. I don't know why he's trying to pretend.
It's like an OCD thing, right? Because they're not shorts and they're not pants. And I feel like there's a lack of commitment there. And I just want them to commit to one thing or the other. Be pants or be shorts. But you can't be both. Unless you're jorts, which is a whole other story.
I just don't know what to say about that.
So the point being, this is my whole objection to Jodie Whittaker as the Doctor.
So you've been warned for this Halloween, stay inside, because we're going to be seeing a lot of these shorts.
Oh, yeah,
true. I know.
Oh, man.
Lots everywhere, man.
Yep.
Oh, man. Now I'm thinking about it. Oh, I'm having a Halloween party. I wonder how many people are gonna dress up in that costume. See, oh, my wife came up with her costume yesterday. She was like, oh, I'm going to be the murderous Ms. Maisel.
Oh, that's good.
And I said, I'll be Lenny Bruce Campbell. And I'll...
It's good, right? Yeah, you guys are clever.
Yeah. How's that working out for us?
Yes.
Being clever. Anyway, there is one other thing that's kind of happening in the world, which is that this big Marvel news dropped, which is that there's going to be a Disney streaming. And like everyone was like, oh, yeah, streaming service. You know, they're going to do a thing. There's going to be some Marvel stuff. I guess we'll see what it is. Maybe probably not like a huge thing. And then they were like, guess what? Tom Hiddleston and Elizabeth Olsen are probably going to have shows where they play Loki and Scarlet Witch. And that's like big ass movie stars. And they're supposedly going to drop this huge budget. Like, I just thought it was like, oh, like, are they going to make like Aladdin 3? Aladdin's dad could come back. Like, I just didn't really expect anything. And now there's this, and it's weird. Like, it's, I was thinking about this and the fact that like Marvel is all over the map with television, all over the place. So like, where does this fit in? Because there's that. And then they announced ABC is going to do like a woman centric show, maybe something like an A-Force or a Fearless Defenders or something. And it's just, yeah, it's crazy because there's like ABC stuff, there's Fox stuff, there's Hulu stuff, there's Freeform stuff, and now there's this. So what are
As Disney and Marvel are divorcing from Netflix and basically creating a competitor, they're still going to have their Netflix shows. You know?
Yeah, although that's pretty big and complicated because, you know, like the sort of like worst kept secret is supposedly like Kevin Feige doesn't really like the Netflix shows. So like, what the hell is Marvel? Like, what is the end game? Where are we going? Like, what are they trying? Like, I'm so confused by it. Like, is it all going to, can they succeed with all of these things at once, or are they going to have to start to pare down?
So I actually don't think the end game is, I think really the way to look at it is they just need to feed the beast. You've got this massive streaming service that they're going to launch that needs to go up against some major established competitors, Hulu, Netflix. You know, they're competing against DC Universe. They're competing against CBS All Access. They just need to fill that sucker up. You know, and they've already got their Star Wars live show. And this is just the next logical thing. So I just really think it's just a matter of, it's a numbers game. You know, it's a programming thing. You just need to fill those slots. I think it's great that they've decided to tap, you know, the actual MCU for this. My only concern is I'm just hoping that this doesn't come across like a series of really glorified post-credits scenes.
Oh,
you know?
Yeah.
Exactly, and that it's meaty and it stands alone.
I mean, it's an 8-episode series, so
I had this question about the Star Trek shorts that they're putting out, which all kind of sound like a post-credit sequence, one after another. Like, I don't know what those are going to be like, but that was my concern for those. So I can see your point, Alexis. But God, you were saying.
No, I was just saying, I mean, to me, it almost feels like we don't have the money to make a Loki movie, but we want to tell a Loki story. How can we do it? And without, you know, something they own wholly, they own the distribution platform. And so they make this 8-episode miniseries. Who knows if we'll ever see another season? You know, it might just be a thing where it's like, we're going to tell this one off and go. And I wouldn't have a problem with that, honestly. I think that's a really smart move. This could be like where things go with Black Widow, for all we know, you know, if these things are successful. So I just feel like it's a couple things. It's, first of all, it is making a big splash on their new service. I think it's a play to find a new way to exploit this stuff that they haven't done before, but in a way that doesn't feel knocked off or cheap or, you know, thrown out there.
Well, things matter, but here's a question. Like, so like, okay, if something really big and important happens to Wanda in her own show, will it be reflected in the movies? Is it more likely to be reflected because it's part of this Marvel streaming?
Well, I kind of hope not.
Well, there's another thing we can look at also here is that it could really serve a function, which is just be the connective tissue in between all the different movies. You know, maybe this could be the link into Phase 5. Maybe, you know, the actual goal isn't to have these standalone things sort of function independently, but really just have them lead into whatever next big plans Kevin Feige has.
Yeah, I just like it makes me think of the whole Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Winter Soldier thing. Where they couldn't really do anything with the show until Winter Soldier came out. And it's like that connective tissue can either really work in favor or right. can really hurt something.
Well, I have to imagine, given the stakes, given the amount of money they're going to spend, given the names involved, they've probably already thought of this. And it's just a question that we have to figure out, like what their answer is. Because I can't imagine they would, again, they're talking about investing like major motion picture level budget
right.
money in this. That they would do that without giving a thought to how it ties into the overall ecosystem. I would be stunned, you know? So
it's kind of interesting though. Cause like there's stuff they could do. I mean, like the Loki series could be, how they finally send Tom Hiddleston off. They could figure out
they sent
like
him off already.
Yeah. But have they,
or have they,
like, wouldn't it be interesting if that was like, here's the story of like everything that leads up to that moment. So you get like a real kind of ending for him, and maybe even a way to sort of explain when they perhaps create a new version of Loki. Cause I mean, like, there's girl Loki. She's been out in the comics for a long time. There's one of those things where like you don't, nobody has to be like, oh, these SJWs, this is in the canon. This is yeah. a thing that's existed. Like this exists in folklore. I mean, like, you know what I mean? Like there's no question. Like this is, you know, like there's nothing to complain about. But like that's a story they could tell. There's, I mean, I there's all sorts of things they could do. Man, they could do like they could set up House of M if they wanted to in a Scarlet Witch show. Like there's a lot of stuff they could do. It's, I mean, like I gotta say, like I heard it and I was like, this is exciting. Yeah. I was more excited about that, and I wish I was equally excited about this ABC thing. I just like, I don't know, man. Like I heard Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. got okay, but like most people didn't stick with it. It took a really long time to get there. Like if they are going to do an A-Force series or like a Fearless Defenders or something, like, man, that shit's got to be good out the gate. Like that needs to be good. Like episode one, like the pilot has got to knock everybody's socks off. And I just haven't seen ABC have the propensity for doing something like that. So like I want to be excited about it, but I'm not.
Let's also remember something here, that Disney owns Fox too. They own a lot of Fox stuff there. So this could be a great platform for that. If you don't want to shell shock people with all these new Fox owned properties moving over into the MCU, this could be a way to slowly introduce certain, shall we say, lower tier characters.
I just, the part of it for me is I'm starting to reach a point where it's getting overwhelming with the number of streaming services with good, I mean, they're all going to have good content that's interesting and you want to see. And I don't know who the person is who's going to subscribe to Netflix, Hulu, Amazon Prime, DC Universe, Disney streaming service, whatever other thing comes down. It's like, that's a CBS All Access. I mean, that's six things at
$9 a piece. I know who that is, but the answer is not an answer that's beneficial to them. Like, you know who's doing that? Me, a freelancer, because it's a tax write-off.
Right.
That's it. That's the only, like, I'll buy all those things because at the end of the day, I need something that I can say to the government, like, hey, man, I had to spend this money. You know what I mean? Right. But, like, so you're talking who about, else like, is doing
yeah, that? You're talking about $50 a month at least on top of your cable subscription, your internet subscription, the stuff you're already paying for.
Well, how many people
to
have a cable subscription? That's the other question.
Well, actually, so I've subscribed to all of those. I'm completely with you. And my whole issue with this was I canceled my cable subscription because it was costing $150. I did not want to spend $150, you know, on some really crappy stations that I'd never watched. So I said, okay, I'm just going to go with Netflix. And then it became Amazon Prime. And then it became Hulu. Now these are all racking up that my cable bill is going to start looking, I'm sorry, my combined streaming bill is going to start looking like a cable bill. I mean, what was the whole point of me cutting the cord in the first place?
Yeah, that's how they get you. I feel like that's it. Like, it seemed like a good idea.
So you
at the
and
time.
I got a split then.
Yeah.
We'll do a timeshare for these. You get Hulu 1 month, I'll get Netflix the other month. Just, how about that?
It's crazy because I literally have everything. And I just, at the end of the year, like, it's always like, it's galling. Like, I look at the total dollar amount that I spend and I'm like, Lord, put it on the taxes. Like, I hope this is going to like counterbalance all of the money that I owe a little bit.
Cause let's not also forget these prices creep up.
Yep.
Yeah, like, absolutely.
DirecTV Now launched, what was it, a year ago? And now it's up by $5, a little bit more.
I don't even want to talk about how much, like, I have a smaller service that I use for my cable and my internet. And it's a great service. It's extremely fast. I use it for everything. It's very reliable. I will not say how much I pay per month. It's insane.
Is it an antenna?
No, it's not. It's RCN. And do you know what it is? It's that, like, so all cable functions on a pretty, very simple system, which is they get you at a lower price, and then they just increase the price, like, every couple months. It goes up and it goes up and it goes up. So if you have RCN or Time Warner or Spectrum or whatever it is, or, like, Fios or one of the Comcast, whatever, like, it starts off at, like, $100, and then all of a sudden you're paying over $200 a month, like, after a year or two. And, like, that's madness. So, and yeah, they're doing the same thing with streaming. Anyway, that's a bummer. Do you want to say something positive before we wrap up?
No, I mean, I'm excited to see what the shows are.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm excited to watch Loki and Scarlet Witch and their own stuff.
I'm excited to see who they actually pick for these shows.
Well, and it's interesting. I mean, the Scarlet Witch one especially, because I feel like, A, Elizabeth Olsen's a great actor. And B, that's a character in the MCU who has, I would say, gotten a little bit of short shrift. Not necessarily that they've deliberately done that, but she's always been kind of on the fringes.
On the side, yeah.
So I'm excited to see that explored more. And like you said, there's so much good stuff from the comics they can pull for these things with that character in particular.
She's a really interesting character. Like, she's really beloved in the comics. So yeah, it's a great opportunity for them to find a spot when they don't have one in the MCU lineup.
And you can always bring her brother back.
Maybe. We'll see. Wow, that's a good point. I hadn't even thought about that. Maybe they will. Anyway, that's our show. We talked about a lot of things. There's a bit of hodgepodge, but I hope you enjoyed it, especially the genitals part. Why not? Yeah. Woo! Everybody loves that. Anyway, thank you for listening. And before we depart, please, if you're not subscribed to Who Won the Week, please subscribe to it. If you've never given us a review, it really does help a lot. And it's good for our metrics, and it also gives us, you know, feedback for ways that we can improve. And also check out all the other sci-fi shows, Strong Female Characters and The Phantom Files, Went Under Earp, and the Everyday Horror that's going to be starting in October. That's mine, so I mentioned it because that's me. And and then all the Amazon stuff. There's like a billion things. Remember when it was just Who Won the Week, Adam?
Yeah, man.
It's crazy. We've really come a long way. Thank you both for joining me. Before we wrap up, where can folks find you on the internet?
People can find me on Instagram at RockTheFaces.
And you can find me on Twitter at Alexis Loynez.
And my name is Danny Roth, and you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Danny Ordinary. That is Danny with one N, Ordinary also with one N. This has been Who Won the Week. Thank you for winning our week, and we'll see you again next week.